welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Shekhar Hislop and Stevie Nicol. We've got Gabriele Marcotti and Nadim Anua joining us tonight as well, and we'll be focusing on European football, starting in Bergamo, where Liverpool failed to overturn that first leg deficit to Atalanta and have crashed out of the Europa League. There was an early penalty from Mohamed Salah, and you wondered if Liverpool were going to find a way back into this tie, but then there was a big miss from the same player in the 39th minute as well that could have been a turning point in this game. In the end, Liverpool won the game, but they do not progress. It was 3-1 for Atalanta on aggregate, and Liverpool are out. Atalanta march on to the semis. Stevie, let me start with you, and let me talk about that Mo Salah chance. As Shaka said, turning point in this game, would it have made a difference had he put that away?
If Mo Salah puts that in the back of the net, I think Liverpool will go on at least to get into extra time and if not, win the game. I think it's that important. It's horrible. And I think, I said it the last couple of weeks, Liverpool going forward, whether it's Mo Salah, Nunes, Diaz, anybody else, are off form. I mean, it's five games since Liverpool scored a goal from open play. They've had a set piece and they've had penalty kicks. They haven't scored a goal in open play since Sheffield United. I mean, you cannot win games of football when your front line is in that sort of form. And that summed up the sort of form that Mo Salah has been in since he came back from injury. Just off the pace, touch is gone. And when you're off the pace and your touch is gone, your confidence is gone. Because that chance he had today was about as simple as it gets. It could not have sat up any nicer for him. Goalkeepers are no man's land. It just takes a bit of accuracy and a decent connection. And my goodness, I think it comes off his shin. So, yeah, for me, from that point on, I wasn't particularly confident of Liverpool winning this game.
Do you think the same as Stevie, that it might have been a different story than Shaka?
Absolutely. I mean, in all honesty, just watching the game with a certain former Liverpool player who we know, Kay, who was stomping around the room to start with, and then after that chance, there was no more stomping. That told its own story. Yeah. But without question, that goal goes in. At that point, 33, 39 minutes on the clock, and all of a sudden, Atalanta are stuck in between. Do we defend what is now a one-goal lead, or do we kind of go on and play our natural game? We've got our own fans here, and they'll be nervy as well as they watch us unfold, because we know Liverpool at their best, Mo Salah in halfway decent form, can score 3, 4, 5 goals on you if you aren't overly careful. That doesn't go in, and you sense not just Mo Salah's form, but Liverpool's kind of reliance on that form, it starts to wane. And you start to believe that, yeah, the Lady Luck is on our side a little bit. And that changes everything about the momentum of the game.
Can I just add why, if that had gone in? Because the rest of the game is going to be calm for Liverpool, because all they have to do is score one goal. It completely changes how they go about it. The longer this game went on, you saw how desperate they got, how they're trying to force it. When you try and force things, you lose your accuracy, you lose your timing. And by the end of this game, it was just frantic. Had Mo Salah put that ball in the net, Liverpool could have calmed down and played the football and let it happen. That's the difference of him missing that chance.
There is, of course, Gab, the argument to be made that they've just given themselves too much to do. And in Bergamo, after that 3-0 deficit.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, obviously, overturning a 3-goal gap is always going to be a tall order. But it was interesting what Stevie was saying there about, getting frantic. It's something that, you know, with some of Liverpool's disappointing results in the league, something Klopp also emphasized as well, that, you know, they're snatching at chances and they're not turning chances into goal. And, you know, and I think this is maybe a carryover from what we'd seen in the Premier League.
Yeah, let's get to that then, Nadim, because obviously we were just saying, and as Stevie was saying, those goals are not coming from open play. Obviously, this was a win on the night, but it didn't really count for much. You look at the recent run of form, obviously that loss to Crystal Palace, the loss to Atalanta, and the draw against Manchester United. Do you think this is more than just a, do you think this is like a turning point? We obviously saw that Mo Salah chance being a turning point in this game. Is this a turning point in their season?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I think Klopp himself was trying to take the positives from the fact that they did win the game today, even though they went out on the tie. But I think as you've seen through those four games, you can picture some of the big chances they've had within that. And those big chances really matter. I think Stevie's described their situation very, very well. Looking at a forward line that just isn't clicking at this moment in time. And those chances that where maybe you missed early in the season, maybe someone else will step up, maybe a shot or a goal from defence or something. But instead, there's a reliance on them to do it, but they're not doing it right now. So I think for Klopp himself, he's going to look at his side and try and find a way to get the most out of them in this final six games of the season. Who knows, maybe it could lead to a Premier League title. But if it continue like this for maybe a game or two games more, you know, even that dream itself will be gone. And I think to talk about that chance that Salah had with the volley, I think to tell a tale about confidence, if you were to just freeze frame it before Salah shoots and then also now go back to Cole Palmer's half volley from further out on his weaker foot, on Monday night, you'd be thinking, well, of course Salah scores and Cole Palmer misses because of the difficulty of those chances, but confidence can make such a big difference. And instead we see Salah miss the target by almost 10 yards, but Cole Palmer make it seem like he's right footed and it's the easiest thing in the world. You know, these little moments matter, little bits of belief matter. I think from a Liverpool perspective, you know, they need to find something from that front line because at the moment it really is misfiring.
A confidence is going to be essential, Stevie, if they are to win a Premier League title right now. What are the chances after what we've been seeing of late?
Well, right now, the only thing they can look at is making sure that they win against Fulham away. And considering, you know, you just put up there the recent results. Can you really, with any confidence, I can't, turn around and say that their next three games, Fulham away, Everton away and West Ham away, are absolutely, they're going to take 9 points. I cannot. Absolutely cannot. And that means that, again, I can't sit here and tell you that Liverpool can win the Premier League because right now, the way they're playing, the form of the front players, if they continue to play like this, they can't win the Premier League.
Let's talk about Atalanta, though, Gab. Obviously, this is a great achievement for Gasperini's men going through to the semi-finals of this competition.
Yeah, it's tremendous. I mean, some people are saying it's their greatest ever achievement. Of course, they've been here before. Many, many moons ago. And of course, they came really, really close a couple years ago when they nearly knocked out Paris Saint-Germain. So I think it shows that on the day, or on the night, I should say, Gasperini can put a game plan together that can jam up an opponent. Obviously, we saw that more in the first leg. And, you know, that's why so many people rate him so highly as a coach. So let's not forget, I think Atalanta, what, eighth in Serie A right now? So it's not something that works for him week in, week out. It certainly hasn't this week, this season. But to me, it's all the more credit for getting it to come together against a side like Liverpool.
Okay, these guys will be back with us on the latest edition of Extra Time. Gab, Nadim, Shaka and Stevie answering your questions. So make sure to go and check out our YouTube channel where you can keep up to date with Extra Time every single day.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. West Ham were trying to turn things around against the Bundesliga champions Bayer Leverkusen, but it wasn't to happen. Mikel Antonio did put the Hammers ahead in the 13th minute, but in the 89th minute, Jeremy Frimpong got the equaliser, which means not only did Bayer Leverkusen march on 3-1 on aggregate, they also remain unbeaten in every single competition all season. 44 games, that record stands at now. Gab, where are you putting Leverkusen when it comes to favourites in this tournament?
I mean, I think I find it really hard to look past Bayer Leverkusen. They were woeful in the first half tonight. I mean, seriously, halftime couldn't come soon enough. He made some changes, sent on Victor Boniface, sent on Jeremy Frimpong, and you know, and then they held possession. And obviously, they just had a job to do on this evening because of the first leg. But certainly, they're right up there, and also. Maybe a little love, a tiny bit of love for Roma and Daniele De Rossi, who's just been extended. He's gonna keep his job next year. I think obviously knocking out Milan in the way they did is gonna give them a tremendous confidence boost.
Brilliant stuff from Leverkusen. Just, Shaq, we were even looking at it knowing that past that 85th minute, something's going to come from them.
Yeah, listen, I think this speaks a whole lot more than just a draw against West Ham, who sitting what. Eighth in the Premier League table. This is about their first game after winning the Bundesliga title.
So maybe they were a little bit hungover in that first half.
And I mean, looking at this one, as much you've got a two-goal buffer from the first leg, I just thought if ever Leverkusen are going to lose their unbeaten tag, it's going to be today because of that Bundesliga win and what it meant to the team emotionally and how do you come down off of that, travelling away to West Ham, who were desperately poor in the first leg, it has to be said. But still, we know who Leverkusen are. We've spoken about it oftentimes jokingly in that, never mind, we switch on in the 80th minute. And that's exactly what happened. And as much as Leverkusen have continued to show who they are, and to Gab's point, maybe weren't that great in the first half, I think the fact that they improved in the manner that they did, the fact that, again, they get within minutes of the final whistle and never looked overly panicked. They always seem to have this confidence in themselves. I just think speaks absolute volumes to everything about Leverkusen this season. In a season that we've kind of struggled to add to the plaudits. But this just, goes even further for me.
Yeah, I know we keep saying it, but 44 unbeaten in every competition, that's pretty special.
No, it is, but can I be a party pooper?
Yep.
They're now in dangerous waters as far as their undefeated streak, because we've five games to go in the Bundesliga. How did they continue to keep the concentration and the sharpness, and how is training the same as it's always been, and how do they put the same commitment into it, all of these things between now and the end of the season?
You're a right party pooper.
There's the Europa League semi-final and a cup final in Germany.
But they've got five league games that don't mean anything.
Yeah, but it's so close. It's only five. You could look at it that way then and say it's only five, yeah. And we remain unbeaten.
But it doesn't work. Football players' brains don't work that way. Football players don't. When you ever talk to a football player and he goes, "Yeah, we want to be undefeated." We don't think about that. We've won the league. We got two cup finals, and so all of a sudden the league takes second place. And when things start taking second place, you don't train the same. You're not as sharp. You don't put in the same effort. You're not as switched on, which you saw in the first. You know, you can say, obviously, they've been celebrating, but that's a symptom of what they've done so far.
So how do you explain a late equaliser then?
I would not be shocked if they dropped a level. And the problem they'll have is the final of the Europa League isn't till the end of the season, and they might not quite be as good as they've been. It's a word of warning, I'm telling you.
I understand exactly what Stevie's saying.
I absolutely understand it.
And if Leverkusen were to win the remaining two trophies, but lose a game at some point along the line, that wouldn't matter to them. That's not what players are, is their focus. But I just think, as we've kind of just seen this season and this story unfold, it just, and again, given who the club are, Leverkusen, who we know their nickname and we know they've never won a Bundesliga title before, we aren't talking about a Real Madrid or a Barcelona doing this. We're talking about a team who's never lifted significant silverware with a head coach who kind of epitomised everything that great footballers are about. And I just feel the story and the romance of it is great for us. It's great for neutrals.
As long as
you win the title, that's the cake. Undefeated is icing.
Why is Stevie such a negative Nelly Gab?
You mean in general or just today? You mean in life?
My analysis. I will limit my analysis to this one subject. And, you know, I incidentally, I don't remember when you were winning league titles with Liverpool. I don't remember you winning the title and then losing every single game the rest of the day, the rest of the season.
Can I stop you there? Why do you think we lost?
Yeah.
Why do you think we lost the FA Cup final in 1988?
No, I'm not saying
we lost the 1988 Cup final against Wimbledon of all teams because we had won the league 3 weeks before the game.
And
by the end of the 3 weeks, we had lost our legs, we had lost our sharpness, we didn't have it in us to break them down because of that. That's why I'm talking the way I'm talking about Leverkusen. Because I've been in the position that Leverkusen are in. And we lost it.
But Stevie, it's two more games. And then they have a Europa League semi-final coming up, right? Against Roma. That's not a bad situation to be in if you want to try and get more stimulus, more motivation. I think what we've seen and what we saw a little bit against West Ham, he mixed it up a little bit. Some of the players that haven't played so much. What people often forget is, you know, this is a team where center forward, you have Schick, you have Boniface, you've got Borja Iglesias, and in midfield, there's Xhaka, but there's also Andrich, there's Palacios at the back as well. They've got four or five options. So I think what you're going to see is some level of rotation, some players who might be more motivated. And in terms of beating the record, it's a couple of Bundesliga games, then you've got the semifinals, one Bundesliga game in between. If you can navigate that without losing, then you've set your record.
Yeah, Stevie. So maybe you'll be a bit more positive.
Listen, I hope they do, and if they continue to play the way they're playing, yeah. But I'm just telling you, I've been in that position before, and we lost it for the reasons that I said. They have to be very cautious that they don't take their eye off the prize.
Was it in your mind, though? Did you really want to do?
No,
you didn't, because they've made a big point that they've all said that they want that unbeaten run as well.
Oh, it's easy to talk.
No, but they say that they want it without even anybody asking them.
We wanted to win the FA Cup.
But of course.
And we told everybody we wanted to win the FA Cup. And it's subconscious. You know, we didn't... Not until afterwards, and you sit and you're sitting down the beach after the season's over, and you start thinking about it, and you go, how could we lose? How come we didn't have the legs? How come we didn't have the sharpness? And then eventually you figure it out. Subconsciously, you're not doing what you're normally doing. You're not putting that extra yard in here and extra yard there, and you're not as sharp. And you're not. There's so many little things that take away what got you to where you were. I'm just a word of caution. I'm not saying that's what they're going to do, but I've seen it before, and they need to be careful.
I think he's just annoyed that Xabi's not going to Liverpool.
Negative Nelly. Goodness.
He'd like to see if Bayer Leverkusen are going to lose this weekend and make sure to catch the Bundesliga coverage. They'll be taking on Borussia Dortmund. I tell you what, though, Borussia Dortmund would love to bring that unbeaten run to an end. They also need to get top four football themselves, do Edin Terzic's men. So this is a big game for them on Sunday against the Bundesliga champions, who at this point remain unbeaten.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Just a reminder of that Manchester City-Real Madrid game in the Champions League, which saw Real Madrid advance to the semi-finals after beating the defending champions in a penalty shootout. Here's more from Pep Guardiola and Rodri after City's exit.
First of all, congratulations to Real Madrid to reach the semi-finals. They defend so deep with incredible solidarity. So we did everything. I don't have absolutely any regret about what we have done. So always we try as a managers and so create more and concede less in every single game because we believe that that helps to be close to win, and we did everything.
It's two of the best teams in the world going up against each other. They couldn't be separated. Is it just down to those small margins, goal here, there?
Well, to be honest, today I saw only one team. But in terms of defending, they defend and they knew how to suffer. Of course, we know how tough is Real Madrid, but in my opinion, we should go through in the times of chances, everything. But this is, as I tell you, the trick of this competition. They know quite well how to play. Congratulate them.
Well, Carlo Ancelotti has said that Real Madrid did what they had to do against City. He said there was only one way to come out of here alive, and that was to take our chances. We took one early, and then by defending well, there's no other way against City. Nader Manua, thoughts on everything you heard after the post-match from both sides here?
To be honest, I think they described it very well. I think most people that watched the game would believe that, you know, City were the better side as such, but their inability to take their chances just meant Real Madrid stayed within the game. I think the element of the Real Madrid defending, you weren't just seeing it from their back line. It was the midfield, like Camavinga's, you're seeing Cruz, the Modric's as well. I think Valverde especially, they're making a big difference for Real Madrid, and they gave them a chance. And when it's Real Madrid in the Champions League, a chance is all they need. Even though it goes down to the lottery of penalties as such, you know, they still had a sort of threat and danger within the game, but they worked very, very hard to almost try and maintain their record as being kings of Europe. And I think the way that City feel yesterday after that game is the way that probably dozens of teams have felt across many, many years. But again, this is their sort of European pedigree. And I think for City, there is huge disappointment for now. You know, they can't retain their title. But as far as facts go, they know that the way that Europe is sort of feeling now, you know, Real Madrid arrive at the Etihad as underdogs. But, you know, they play in that manner because that's what they need to do.
Stevie, Real Madrid did what they needed to do. That was the only way.
You know, Real Madrid always seem to do what they need to do to win. You know, particularly in this competition. I mean, in recent years, you wonder how. I mean, the last time they beat City, you wonder, how did they do it? I mean, how did they beat Liverpool in the final? You wonder, how did they do it? How did they win this game? But you know what? They know how to win. And it's not always about the pretty side of the game. You know, I certainly didn't think we'd be talking about heroic defending, defending as a unit, pulling out people like Modric and Rudiger. Well, Rudiger probably is the wrong example, but every single one of them put every single thing they had on the line in order to win this game. And it just shows you that, you know, it's not always about the pretty side of the game. Yes, we all love to see good passing, good movement, great football for 90 minutes. But sometimes you just got to work hard. And that's what won them this game. Sheer hard work and good decisions, taking your chance, and they march on.
And once again, Gab, Carlo Ancelotti, cool as a cucumber.
Yeah, I mean, he's cool afterwards. I think behind closed doors, I don't know quite how cool he is. But, you know, all this stuff, Bernardo Silva, I only saw one team out there. I wonder how many teams in the world you take away their two first-choice center backs and their first-choice goalkeeper and their best defensive midfielder. Just pluck them out of the team, right? And then we'll see who we see out there, right? Gee, won't that be a jolly Stefan Ortega out there? Whoever you want at the back, except for the good ones. No Rodri. Won't that be fun? Let's see how much fun that is. I mean, I don't understand this level of, like, you know, they're making it seem as if, you know, they went out there and did something illegal and trying to defend and, you know, especially after going ahead early, trying to hang in there, trying to play with their strengths, still having that chance laid on through Rudiger. I really don't follow why it's some kind of criminal thing and only one team played football.
God, why are you so angry?
Well, no, because it just bugs me.
I mean, let's be honest. They won it because all of the things... I mean, did we watch the same game? They got battered. And we can talk about, oh, if he didn't play. We can talk about that. How about we talk about what happened? They got battered, and in football terms, they got battered. But from a defensive point of view, every single one of them gave their heart and soul, right, and that's why they won the game. What makes you so angry about that?
Yeah, no. What makes me angry is if you don't recognize that you're playing a team that has so many pieces missing, that's away from home, against a team that won 2-11 and probably a better side. And then you say, well, only one team was out there playing. I mean, it's that quote,
right? So Rodri, you're angry at Rodri.
Only one team tried to play.
Right. Well, be angry at Rodri.
I'm angry at
us.
I'm angry at you guys. Just you, Rodri. Right.
I don't think this game played out any other way than I was expecting. And I'm a little bit amazed at the surprise that is expressed as a result. Listen, Real Madrid, given what happened last season, you knew Real Madrid were going to come and be far more defensive. Now, let's keep in mind who they're playing against, Manchester City. We know who they are in terms of how they keep the ball, how they possess it, as all Pep Guardiola teams have done. In the first leg at the Bernabeu, in a game that I thought Real Madrid absolutely had to win if they were to have any hope of going through, Real had 38% possession, and we're trying to hurt Man City on the counterattack. 3-3, that played out. We all know how that played out. Now, coming into this one, I'm not sure why anybody expected anything different than Real to be defensive and try to hit Manchester City on the counterattack. And in the end, let's be honest, the Bernardo Silva, the Kevin De Bruyne chance over the crossbar, but Luna didn't have a whole lot to do otherwise.
Yeah, but he did in the penalty shootout. So let's get Pep Guardiola's thoughts on those penalties.
Did you think Bernardo was affected by the ball not back to him quickly?
I don't know. Bernardo asked for the first, I want to take it. He's a reliable player and decide to shoot in that way. But absolutely, Bernardo was, again, what a game he played. So, no, it happened. The ball went out and, that's what it is.
We attempted to keep Kevin on, or knowing that there was a possibility of penalties.
Erling and Kevin asked me to go out, could not continue, like Manu. So the game we were playing, they were amazing. I did a big fan to make a lot of substitutions, but Kevin, Erling and Manu asked me to go out because we could not continue.
So hold your thoughts on Haaland and Kevin De Bruyne are asking to come out. We're going to get to that. But as for Bernardo Silva's penalty, we're taking a look at it here. Obviously went down the middle. You've just seen Kepa there talking to Lunin because he'd actually already conceded a down the middle Bernardo Silva penalty in the 2019 Carabao Cup final. Here is that final. And it didn't turn out well for him on the day. So he was able to then use his knowledge of that situation to help his goalkeeping mate at Real Madrid the next time Bernardo Silva would be taking a penalty against a side that he was in. A little bit of the trickery there, Shaka.
And well played for by both goalkeepers, Kepa and Lunin. Now, first of all, well, certainly in the 2019 Cup final, it kind of looked like Bernardo Silva was going to go to his left, Kepa's right, and Kepa moved a little bit early and he goes down the middle. Now, And this is something that people outside of the game kind of question a lot. Why don't more players just go down the middle? Because it's you make things easy for the goalkeeper if that's your plan, if that's your choice. Now, the good penalty takers I know who score down the middle more times than not, That's not their plan A. They are going left or right, and if you go early in an effort to get to that penalty, they just change it and put it straight down the middle. Now, to me, and while again in 2019 it seemed different with Bernardo Silva, this time it was clear that was his intention to let the goalkeeper move, and Lunin was just equal to it. And now it just looks like a far more awful penalty than if he goes one way or the other and Lunin makes a save. Ask the goalkeeper to make a save. Don't stand there over a penalty in a Champions League quarter final and dolly it up for the keeper. I think that's kind of that's shirking harsh. A major responsibility.
That's harsh, Shaka.
What did he do? He dollied it up for the goalkeeper, didn't he? That's what he did.
So if the goalkeeper dives one way, then we say he's a genius. We say he's cool as a cucumber. The goalkeeper's decided to stand there. How stupid would the goalkeeper... Let's switch this the other way. How stupid would the goalkeeper have looked if he had stood the way he did and the ball had gone in the corner?
No,
we're obviously, what's he doing?
When it comes to penalty, and it's a tactic a lot of goalkeepers use, when it comes down to a penalty shootout and they're let me just tell you the mindset of goalkeepers, which many use. It comes down to a five. Now, out of that five, two maybe are regular penalty takers. So a lot of goalkeepers employ the thinking, I'm going to stay in the middle and I'm going to wait to save that bad penalty. Out of five, you're going to get two or three bad penalties. That's the thinking, because a lot of those penalty takers aren't used to taking penalty kicks under a lot of pressure. So now if you go down the middle, then you're just feeding into that thinking. Now, I get you, your point is more times than not goalkeepers move, but if that's the goalkeeper's thinking that I'm going to stay here and wait for the bad penalty, and you offer that as a bad penalty, then that's on you.
No, that's harsh. Yeah. Listen, you can. I absolutely praise the goalie for doing his homework, figuring it out, whether it's Kepa, whether it's the goalie coach, whether it's Lunin himself. But you can't go smashing him for taking a penalty. You can't.
So
you can't stand
penalty?
There. You can't stand and say, "Oh, how can you? How dare you stand over the ball and then do that?" No, you can't say that.
So you say, "Well done." You say well
it's
done
penalty,
to that.
It's
you
a say penalty
unlucky.
Shootout.
You say unlucky
yes.
to that.
Yes.
Ooh, okay.
Yes,
right.
It is unlucky.
All right.
Is unlucky.
The good
right.
news is we do have on the panel a penalty expert, and Nader Manua. Nader, I'd like to get your thoughts on the situation. Also, Nader, I want to just talk a little bit about the psychology, because there has been a lot of talk. We heard it from Pep there as well about how long it did take for Bernardo Silva to get the ball to actually take the penalty.
Yeah, all these things can play into it. But I think I err with Stevie on this one. And the fact is, like, I don't expect a goalkeeper to stand up in the middle. I think it just looked ridiculous because, like, as I said, a goalie wouldn't be there. And if Bernardo would have rolled it to the left or the right, you know, you'd be wondering, well, why is Lunin standing there? It would have been so critical of his decision-making to just stand there. But it is weird because it's Xhaka, the former goalkeeper, talking about a current one. So, yeah, maybe he should be the specialist. But I think in terms of, like, gamesmanship and all that stuff, I think that will play into it. But when you have somebody stepping up that wants to take a penalty, that believes that they can score, then the amount of time that it could take to receive the ball and so on, like, they've played in big moments. They've played for the national teams. They've played in Champions League finals. I don't think the extra time would have fazed them as such. And I think for him, he's disappointed. But a missed penalty or penalty saved by a goalkeeper, in my opinion, they all kind of just feel the same because the person stepping up has done the best that they can. But in this particular moment, the goalkeeper's won the battle.
Xhaka, let me get the goalkeeper's perspective then on Antonio Rudiger pointing the right way for Kovacic's penalty. We obviously saw the former Chelsea boys playing a big part in this.
Given that it's happening kind of near the halfway line, I'm not sure if Lunin sees that. And the other thing too is that there's a lot of that going on from a number of people, yeah. Both at the half line, people on the bench having their say. But you just have to trust. You just have to trust the research that has gone in before, because at this level of the game, at this stage of the game, everybody's coming in there, and we've seen goalkeepers with stuff taped to the bottles and all sorts. You have an idea of what a penalty taker's preferred side is.
Gab, what are you laughing at?
No, it's true about people pointing every which way. But by the way, you want to talk psychology before. Ederson coming up and going, was it fourth? And if you look at the way Ederson finished it, I was listening to what Xhaka was saying before about goalkeepers studying penalty kick takers. I think it works both ways in the sense that as a goalkeeper, if you could kick a ball, obviously, like Ederson, you're going to have such an advantage because I thought he hit that perfectly and he hit it like somebody who understands the psychology of a goalkeeper.
Some of the goalies are the better penalty takers than players.
Why, thank you, Stephen.
Yeah.
Yep, well.
I've seen them, man.
Edison put his away. Now,
I don't know why I'm smiling, but I'm taking it.
I did say I'd revisit the point where Pep Guardiola talks about Erling Haaland and Kevin De Bruyne wanting to not continue in this game. And Stevie, you're already shaking your head about this.
Well, I wish he had told us. And even if it's not true, if I'm Guardiola, I'm going to say the two of them were feeling something. Mm. Just to get rid of everything. Because I have never in the history of history heard of the star player in a quarter final of a Champions League wanting to come off. And he's your centre forward. He's your goal scorer. He's the guy you want to get the ball to. And he doesn't want to play. Never heard of it in my life. And if he's not injured, what is going on in this guy's head?
It's got to be that he's tired that he's asked.
I'm tired. Listen, I get it. Kevin De Bruyne is a different ballgame. But Haaland, because he's tired, be quiet. If I went up to someone, my old coach, and said, I'm tired, they would have punched me straight in the face.
What if you're feeling a little something?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If Guardiola had any sense, he would have come out and said, he's feeling something, and then that takes everyone away. Because I'm telling you, in the history of the game, I've never heard or seen a star player in such a big game want to come off.
Gab?
No, I he's giving you, from a coach's perspective and a player's perspective, I'll give you one from a media perspective. Pep can get away with doing it because he's Pep and he's achieved all that he's achieved at this club. But from a comms perspective, from a snuffing out controversy perspective, this is almost like the worst possible thing you could say. If Erik ten Hag took off Bruno Fernandes and Rasmus Højlund and said, oh, well, they asked me to come off, and doesn't then say, I could tell they were tired or they were carrying an injury or whatever else, and then United go on to lose, people go and tear him a new one. And I think that's a difference here. Maybe it was just being honest. Maybe, who knows? But it's a bizarre thing. It's a bizarre thing to say. Like I said, Pep's okay because nobody's going to doubt him, and rightly so, because he's kind of earned that trust. Anybody else, it's a very, very dicey thing to say when you start saying, well, the player wanted to come off in the Champions League, late in the Champions League quarterfinal, and you don't mention that the player was injured or tired or felt something or whatever.
Nathan, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, to be honest, for the way that the story has come out and the quotes and stuff like that, you're almost picturing, like, say, Kanji, Haaland, De Bruyne coming over to the sideline saying, excuse me, Gaffer, could I please come out? I'm a little bit tired. You know, and I don't think that's what it's going to be. I think it's going to be something different within there. Maybe there were physios asking them, how are you feeling? How's this knock? How's this? How's that? And they said they're trying, but maybe the decision was made by the manager to just go for fresher legs, because in that moment, you know, they did need to push. They couldn't afford to let up at all. But I don't think it's as simple as say that quote is. And I think from a comms perspective, I'm with Gab, like, it sounds a bit crazy on those players, but those players themselves are ones who are obsessed with the game of football. So for them to be coming off, you know, I think it has to be something a bit more significant. And I really doubt that these guys who love football the way that they do are coming to the side and saying, please, can I sub out? I've had enough of this absolute worldie of a game with Real Madrid in the Champions League quarterfinal.
All right.
Here's the thing, though. The only, as of right now, and Nadim's right, maybe the story unfolds and something else comes out from it, but as of right now, all we have is this quote, they asked me to come out, and which just rubs the wrong way against everything I believe a professional footballer normally stands for. Yep. Now, here's the other thing, and while maybe he goes to them and asks, maybe this is how it happened, and they say they have a knock and or whatnot, let's keep in mind how many people are on the bench here. How much staff is on the bench? You have staff who are paid to monitor players, and from the time they start slowing down, from the time they start showing any kind of exhaustion, ordinarily before a player himself would admit, I am just gassed. There are staff members who are paid to know that, to identify that. So there isn't that drop in performance. So somewhere, something has gone woefully wrong. As I say, either it's a dereliction of duty by that staff, or as of right now, it's kind of that dereliction of a professional code by two players who, let's be honest, have been there and done it. I have not kind of shirked any kind of responsibility at this kind of level. So it makes it all the more bemusing.
Well, Manchester City have got to dust themselves off because there is a lot more ahead when it comes to this season. And obviously, coming up next, we have got the FA Cup semi-finals. Manchester City are taking on Chelsea, and Coventry City will be taking on Manchester United Saturday and Sunday for both of these games on ESPN+.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
FA Cup replays are to be scrapped from the 24-25 season. From the first round next season, as part of a six-year agreement with the Premier League to strengthen the domestic competition, the FA announced on Thursday. Can you tell us any more about this, Gab?
Yeah, so this was a consultation between the Premier League and the FA, who organise a club, the Cup. Obviously, the Premier League are, in many ways, a distinct organization, and they have to agree. I think traditionalists will say, well, you know, we lose the magic of the cup replay and, you know, the chance to go and play at Old Trafford or the Emirates or whatever. That's probably true, but I think it's also worth remembering that they scrapped replays from the fifth round onwards, and they made other concessions. Like, they're only going to have weekends where you only play FA Cup football, you know, not its combination of FA Cup and Premier League football, like the one we're getting up coming up this weekend. So, you know, traditionalists will be angry about it, but personally, I think it was pretty much inevitable given the fixture congestion.
Do you like it, Nader?
Do you know what? I personally like it, as is the case with Gab, but I've spoken to lots of people who, you know, have a real fondness for teams that play in the Football League. And as a consequence, when this conversation has been happening throughout the season, they've said it's like preposterous. They're saying, well, these days are magic days for us, getting a chance to go and play at these big stadiums, say finding that result at home as a significant underdog. And obviously that is a nuanced argument in itself, because you want a replay when there are two League One sides playing against each other, for example. But I think this is a real significant change. And the fact that you're hearing from the FA, the fact that you're hearing from the Premier League, like, I'm sure there'll be people from that football pyramid who are very passionate about their clubs and their leagues who feel like they've been let down in this moment, and the tournament is now drifting towards, you know, just the Premier League's being able to benefit as such. And not least of all, when we make the talk about fixture congestion, which is a real thing, which is a real thing in the Football League, like, they do play 46 games in the season as well.
Right.
So they are getting a lot of fixtures in. And I understand, as I say, I understand the arguments, and personally I like it. But there are going to be lots of people within England who are going to be very, very disappointed with it.
Go ahead, Gab.
No, I just want to say quickly, Nathan made a great point there. But about the whole thing is, people talk about, oh, I want the replay. I want a chance to go play it at Anfield or whatever. So, you know, that's great that you want the chance. But if you look at it purely from a sporting perspective, this is better for the smaller clubs, right? Because if you don't have a replay, then it's easier for the smaller clubs to advance, because in 90 minutes, anything can happen. And over 180 minutes, Man City and Liverpool or whatever are likely to win. So it's one of those things where often it is actually, I think, about money, and some of these smaller clubs, you know, wanting to have, because of the way the money is distributed in the FA Cup, they want to play at Old Trafford because they get 15% of a gigantic gate. And it's factors like that, rather than just, you know, what are my team's chances of advancing? Because clearly without replays, it favours the smaller, lower division clubs.
You can hear more from Gab on the Gab and Jules podcast. That drops twice a week. Wherever you do get your podcast, the latest has just dropped today. So make sure to go and check that out in your feed. To the Europa Conference League now. We've got Lille taking on Aston Villa. Villa were leading 2-1 from the first leg in this game. But in the 15th minute, Youssef Lasici would make it 1-0 to Lille.
Beautiful first time strike here. Picks his spot, rolls it in the corner. Nobody's getting close to that.
67th minute, Benjamin Andre heading home from a corner.
It's a really good header. Into the near post, good delivery. Just gets the slightest of touches on it. Nobody at that far post.
Lille were leading at this point on aggregate, but Matty Cash had his say to send it to extra time in the 87th minute. Lille wanted a foul called here, but the goal would stand.
Well, it should have been disallowed. That run for me shoves the defender into the goalkeeper. That's why he drops the ball. Shouldn't have been allowed. A good strike from Cash, a little bit of a deflection.
Into extra time we go. See Leon Bailey trying to get it in here. Would fall to Douglas Luiz. Header would be saved though.
Nice first save, but falls nicely to Douglas Luiz. He thinks he scored, but that is some reaction by Chevalier.
Yeah, Lille sending across in here. Big shouts for a handball on Massey Cash. No penalty given.
I actually thought this was a penalty.
Me too.
And the fact that it wasn't given, I'm convinced now that I really don't know what a penalty is when it comes to a handball.
I just
don't know.
Emi Martinez was quite animated, shall we say, in the penalty shootout. He'd already been booked in this game. He got booked at this time as well, but bookings are not carried into the shootout. Many he could stay on. He'd been shushing the crowds. This is when he got the yellow for his antics. But yeah, that's when we went deeper into that rule. Bookings not carried into the shootout. He'd stay on there. And then, let's see, Leon Bailey, obviously his penalty was saved earlier. Douglas Luiz converts his. It comes up to this, and Martinez has his moment once again and makes the most of it.
He's a shy lad, isn't he?
He really is.
Make what you like of Emiliano Martinez. Good for saving penalty kicks. He's going to rub many the wrong way. But when you need him most, he has a knack of coming up trumps.
Villa's first European semi-final since 1982. And remember, Unai Emery's got some pedigree when it comes to European finals, winning the Europa League with Sevilla, with Villarreal. He will have his eyes firmly on the prize. But let's get to some of those controversial moments then, Shaka, starting with this goal here.
Yeah, I have to admit, we had a long look at this, a long debate about this, and eventually you get an angle that I think it should have been given. I don't think there's any intention to play the ball by the striker. The defender's just trying to make a way for the goalkeeper. And because there's no intention to play that ball, I changed my mind at the 11th hour and That should have been chalked off.
So Matty Cash's goal shouldn't have stood?
Shouldn't have stood.
Okay, Nadim?
No, I actually disagree on this one. I think in the fact that he's saying Duran's not trying to play the ball, I don't think Bentaleb has either. In that fact that he's trying to protect it for the goalkeeper, you know, neither of them are really trying to contest it. And I think the collision is there. And personally, I'd want my goalkeeper to do a better job of it. But I think Bentaleb himself, he's not trying to do anything apart from, as I say, possibly shield it for the goalie. So I go against it.
Gab.
But that's okay. It's football.
I think he should have been disallowed here. I understand Nadim sticking up for these for the defenders' fraternity, though.
I'm blaming the keeper. Fraternity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I agree. Keeper should have done better. Keeper should have done a whole lot better. But I stand by again. Kind of the more I see it, there's no intention to play the ball. And while Bentaleb is just holding his position, he's entitled to.
So Bentaleb's like, what's he trying to do? He's just trying to just exist, just to be in space.
But
because I think he's trying to sort of block off Duran to allow the goalkeeper to go for it. So he's lost the physical battle.
My point is,
for me, that's why it's not fun.
He's in position, and he's standing there, and he's forced into the path of the goalkeeper. He's entitled to stand in a position in the park if he wants, and I think he gets that position, and then is forced into the path of the goalkeeper. So for me, if he's forced into the path of the goalkeeper by a genuine attempt to play the ball, then fair enough. But I don't think that was or could be considered a genuine attempt to play the ball.
The shouts for the handball in extra time on Matty Cash as well, Stevie, just to revisit that moment.
I thought it was a penalty, and I'm going off all the penalties that are given these days for handball. That looked like a penalty to me. But as I said, the fact that it was disallowed, I'm in no man's land. I'm really not sure what is and what isn't anymore.
I'm in total agreement. Listen, I think the thing for me is that ball comes a long way, and while it just beats a couple of players' heads, it touches nobody and strikes Matty Cash's arm. Now, the argument could be that, well, his arm is fairly close to the body, but then you could probably say exactly the same for the Liverpool-Atalanta game where that goal was given. Arm was close to the body. That ball was struck from a couple of yards away, and that was given. So in terms of the arm position, I didn't see this as all that different. I thought this was more egregious because it comes a long way without touching anybody before hitting Matty Cash on the arm.
A final word to Gab on this one.
I appreciate that, you know, there are certain situations where your arms have to be away from your body for balance. This is not one of them. Why not just put your arms behind your back the way so many other defenders around Europe won't have this hit. You won't have this problem because otherwise you're vulnerable to it. Was it close to his body? Was it away? 50-50.
Cab just failed his coaching badges. Putting your arms behind your back.
Oh, really? Draw those penalty kicks against you, Stevie.
Yeah.
Ooh.
You don't have put them behind your back. Keep tuck them in. Tuck them in. You don't have to do this nonsense.
Or you can tuck them in.
There's a reason why the police ask you to put your hands behind your back. The reason you put your hands behind your back when the police tell you to is because it completely immobilises you. So why would you do that on a football field, Gab? Completely immobilise yourself. Makes no sense. All these people that run around like that. And I'll tell you now, I don't understand.
I don't understand
why the coach doesn't go up and say to them, why are you putting your hands behind your back? It's absolute stupidity. It's nonsense. And I can't believe the coaches don't get on. If you keep your hands tucked in, how about you do that?
Okay, so what, you do the penguin thing? I mean, I don't...
Nadim, did you ever tuck your hands behind your back?
These must.
No, I'm from a different generation. We just had handballs given against us. Yeah, I needed to move on, unfortunately.
I want to know what the goalkeepers' union thought of Emi Martinez's antics today.
Emi Martinez. Listen, I'm not a fan of his antics. I said this after the World Cup final in 2022. I'll say it again. But if that's what makes you tick, if that is feeding into your personality and your successes as a goalkeeper, then do it. I go for it. I have absolutely no real issue with that.
Stevie, you loved it.
It's all right if he's on your team.
Right.
Yeah. That's it. After that, Hate it.
So because you were neutral today, it was all right?
Absolutely,
didn't
yeah.
at all. Gab,
absolutely.
Where do you stand on his antics?
Look, I mean, Stevie played with a guy named Bruce Grobbelaar who used to do things like this, not to this degree. As long as there aren't situations where he's being outwardly vulgar and disrespectful, like holding the World Cup in a certain position, as he did back in Doha, whatever. I'm okay with it. As long as, I mean, you might think he looks like a tool, but if it works for him, like Shaka said, it's his personality.
Nadim, do you like it or dislike it?
Personally, I dislike it, but if he was on my team, I think as long as he's more rattling the opposition as opposed to motivating them, then great. Because I think if he's going to make people be desperate to score against him, then I think that's when it becomes more of an issue. But as we've seen over the last 2 years, I think he's doing just fine, to be honest.
Well, it is Aston Villa after that, flying the flag for English teams in European competitions as we take a look at the Conference League bracket right now and how things look. They will be taking on Olympiacos in the semis, and it's Fiorentina taking on Club Brugge in the other semi. Here's what Ilkay Gundogan had to say in the post-match after Barcelona's Champions League exit to PSG. He said, you need to be sure to get the ball, give the forward the opportunity to let our goalkeeper maybe save us or even concede a goal, because to go down one man, get a red card so early in the game, it just kills your game. Obviously, he's talking about Ronald Araujo's sending off in the 29th minute. Araujo was asked directly what he thought about Gundogan's comments, and he said, I prefer to keep it with myself what I think about those comments. I have my codes and values that I think you need to respect. When asked if Gundogan had not met those codes and values, he replied, I think I have already replied to that question. So, Stevie, you don't mind what Gundogan said here. You don't think, you think it's maybe been taken out of context by some of the media here?
Well, I do. I think forever and a day, everybody's complaining about how players never say anything and they never tell us anything. And well, this is a perfect example why most players don't tell you anything, because it doesn't matter what you say, they're going to turn it a certain way. And now all we're trying to do is create a problem between Gundogan and Araujo. I think you have to take into account who's speaking here. Gundogan is a straightforward, honest guy who just kind of tells the truth without throwing people under the bus. I don't think his statement throws anybody under the bus. All he said is that it completely changed the game, and that position, if you're going to go for the ball, you have to win it, otherwise you're in trouble. But yet, this is being turned into Gundogan is trying to throw Araujo under the bus. So, you know what? Just be careful what you wish for. You start doing this, then nobody will talk to you.
Nadim, I think it's been highlighted more because after the first Clásico in La Liga this season, Gundogan came out after Barcelona lost, saying that he expected the dressing room to be more angry than what it was. So because there's a previous situation here where he has spoken out and said something that maybe some wouldn't expect, I think this is why this one's been picked up. Where do you stand on it?
Yeah, I'm with Stevie. I think this one is kind of been blown out of proportion a little bit. And like the full quote, it mentions the fact he said, well, if it's a foul, then it's probably a red card. And even in talking about the incident, he's not making it specific to Araujo. He's just talking about that moment and how you'd want to be able to potentially defend that situation if you had a chance to go back there and do it again. You know, trust the goalkeeper, you know, maybe give them a chance at this, maybe give them a chance at that. And that's how people analyse games backwards. It's not an attack against Araujo in the incident itself. But I think the way he described it is factually correct, because that red card completely changed the game from their standpoint against a very good PSG side. So I think maybe some people would be uptight about it, but until he says something that is truly unfair or untrue, then I think it's fine, to be honest.
So let me get the word from both of our defenders then on the panel in that moment when we're actually looking at that moment where Gundogan's saying, you know, he should have just let it go. Do you even have that thought when it's so quick to think, OK, it would actually make more sense to just let him go?
Well, the problem is you don't have time. He initially thinks he's going to win that ball, or at least be shoulder to shoulder. And then all of a sudden he realises he's not. And then it's just an instinct. You know, you don't get time to work things out, get a pen and paper out and go, right, OK, if I take him down, then he's not going to get through, and then it could be a red card. You don't get that time. You have to make a split decision, and he made the wrong one because he got himself in the wrong position to start with.
Do you agree with that, Nadim?
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. And I think if anything, looking back, like, I think as Barclay, he's got really good pace, and you can see that he wanted to use it in that moment. So maybe you could potentially try and slow him down. It's not to say allow him to go through 1v1, but maybe like potentially realize that you can't get to that ball because the player that's coming is coming at great speeds, which you won't be able to handle yourself.
Okay, well, we will see Barcelona back in action against Real Madrid this weekend. Just a small matter of El Clásico coming up Sunday, 2 Eastern, for all the build-up to this game as we see what happens when these two face off in Madrid at the Santiago Bernabeu. It's that time, Shaka.
Oh, it's been a while with the international break, and then I was otherwise engaged. Leverkusen just stayed top. They just keep motoring on. Real Madrid pulling out all these tops in the Champions League yet again. PSG have to get some love. Bayern Munich, despite all the criticism this season, somehow they're in the Champions League semis. City in at fifth. Dortmund, surprisingly there. Again, surprisingly, kind of given how this season has gone. And Inter, top of Serie A. Roma, Stuttgart have been incredible stories all season long. Aston Villa get some love after their recent heroics in the league and in the Europa Conference League. The others are out. That's not good enough. Losing games back-to-back as you have.
So surely Roma and Dortmund deserve to be higher, don't they?
Instead of who?
Man City.
Nah, Man City.
Inter. Roma should be above Inter.
Roma.
Inter got beat at the weekend, didn't they? Then it got
no,
beat
they
at the
didn't.
Weekend.
No, they didn't. Not this weekend. Inter still cruising away at top of Serie A. City top of the Premier League. Go out on penalties. Nah, they can't be higher than City. Surely not.
Why not? They're in the semi-final of the biggest competition
in
Europe.
But Dortmund have fought
the biggest competition in Europe.
Dortmund have fought them domestically.
And Man City's not.
And by all accounts, if Silva wasn't so unlucky with his penalty, it could have been City top. There's a penalty shootout.
So you're saying Silva was unlucky?
Well, that's what I heard. That's what somebody told me.
Very focused when Checkers Power Rankings came up. What were you thinking?
Yeah. No, I just like to see them and then hear him describe them. And the thing that caught me off guard the most is the fact he said he was surprised to see Dortmund at six, even though he made the rankings himself. But clearly it's another work of art from Shaka Hislop. How long may it continue?
I don't make the rankings, Needham. It's data. I give the data and the...
Okay. You put it in.
A machine, it pops out. Yeah. You know, I can't argue with data. That's what I found. So I'll need them.
Are we okay with them this week, Gab?
Good point.
Yeah, you know.
Quality data in, quality data out. What can I say?
You see, there's a lot of Italian representation. I knew I'd have Gab on my side.
Gab, Italian team's in it, German team's in it. Yeah. Stuttgart making it. I'm impressed, Chaka.
Oh, thank you very much.
First time ever.
I'm about to say it's the first time I've ever heard that from you. I can normally rely on you.
Can't believe it. Could only be better if Middlesbrough were in there.
I'm going to retire. Oh, good God. It was going so well. It was all going so well.
It was 6 foot under before
the year 2030. Over on ESPN FC, make sure to stay up to date with all the biggest topics from the world of football on our YouTube channel. And make sure to stay up to date with Football Americas, touching on everything happening in the world of soccer over this side of the world. Next one coming up tonight after the show, so make sure to be with Seb and her to keep up to date with everything that's going on. Thanks so much for being with us on the latest edition of ESPN FC. Stick around, though. These guys are going to answer your questions on the latest edition of Extra Time. Gab and Nadim are staying back too, so we'll see you over there. Hang on a minute.
What?
I haven't even got a chance to say welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time, and he's already ready. No, and I'm worried.
I was just thinking, are you going line dancing tonight? Getting all that. Hey.
Line dancing. Okay. You say Texas.
Cowboy hat over there.
A cowboy boot.
Yeah.
How long have you been waiting?
A whole show.
I am not going line dancing tonight.
Oh, well, you should.
I think you should get a bit of pleather in your life.
I need something. I don't know where that's at.
I told you, Stevie, you want to give you a little glow up. I think you'd see.
That's a concerning sight. That's the thing about.
Oh, moving on. All right, Dan's fancy dress shorts. Perfect. First question.
Speaking of fancy dress.
Which Premier League team is going to be the most effective by being eliminated from European competition? Oh. Man City, Arsenal or Liverpool? Nadim.
I think purely from a fitness standpoint, I think I'm going to say Man City potentially this weekend. Just because them going to extra time and then having a quick turnaround to play at Wembley against the Chelsea side. I think the City side that will play on Saturday won't be the one which you probably would have liked to have played if that game was done within 90 minutes. So I'm going to lean that way, I believe.
I think it has to be City. I don't think Liverpool could care less about being out to the Europa League. And I think Arsenal have their sights firmly set on the league. The Champions League is I always felt a little bit beyond Arsenal at this stage. But City as defending champions, I think that kind of plays on their psychology. Of the three, easily. Only one, really, it matters to.
There you go, Steve. You're going to be fine. You can keep him out, because you said Liverpool were going to be all right last weekend.
City plays Saturday, right? Is that correct?
Yes, Saturday.
That's going to be tough. That's going to be tough for City.
Who do they play? Who do they have?
They're playing Chelsea. Chelsea. I know it's Chelsea, but... I don't think it's Arsenal. I'm going to say it's absolutely not Arsenal. And Liverpool's is going to be a different reason. City's is just physically. Physically, absolutely, they're going to be hurting big time. So I'm going to go with City.
All right. City. Yeah. Arsenal play at Wolves Saturday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, City.
All right. Gab, next question's for you. Do you guys think they should bring back the away goals rule or not?
No, I don't think they should. I think we've seen it's been pretty exciting, both the Europa League and the Champions League. And you know, I think the away goals rule had its time and its place. We've also seen people go and kind of game it over the last 10-15 years. I'm glad they got rid of it. Just go and play two 90-minute halves and then an extra little bit at the end of extra time if necessary.
And next question's for you as well, Gab. How impressive of a job has De Rossi done with Roma since he's taken over, in your opinion? And do you think he should be appointed as full-time manager?
Well, he has been appointed as full-time manager. And believe it or not, what the Friedkins think in this case is even more important than what I think. I think he's done a phenomenal job. And while there's a whole bunch of Mourinho fans out there who point to the underlying XG and underlying metrics and say that, you know, they actually haven't changed very much since De Rossi was appointed. The results have been better. I think the play's been a lot more entertaining. And the way he's generally behaved himself has been incredibly positive and incredibly endearing. Does he have the great relationship with the crowd that Mourinho engendered and fostered in his 2 years in charge? No, or rather, not in the same way, not as a manager. He obviously has that legacy as a player, but I think he's lived up to it, and we'll see where he is next season. But again, the way he's handled it from what you saw with Evan Ndika at the weekend, the way he handled that, other situations with players, he very much kind of fits that slightly more cuddly, shall we say, younger manager. And right now, people are lapping it up.
Stevie, if Liverpool finished the season with just the Carabao Cup, how would you grade their season?
Disappointing. Liverpool's objective at the start of the season isn't to come away with the Carabao Cup. I think that kind of says it all. Liverpool's standards should be Premier League. Not even a question about being in the Champions League for the following year. Certainly the FA Cup should be ahead of the Carabao Cup. So, as I said at the start, Liverpool's season shouldn't be about winning the Carabao Cup. Should be more.
What was the expectation to start this season? What was the realistic expectation to start? Given what we saw from them last season, what was the realistic expectation to start this one?
Yeah, fifth last year, over 20 points behind City.
Well, I think considering what Klopp's done and what his teams have done, considering that the players, particularly McAllister and Szoboszlai, they brought in, competing for the Premier League title, certainly reaching the final of the Europa League. I mean, this result against Atalanta is a disaster. The FA Cup turned out to be a disaster.
So let's
so the, so the Carabao, let me turn it on you then. Do you think the Liverpool's standards are the Carabao Cup, or they should be, and are they higher than that?
No, I don't think that that's where their standards end, right, with the Carabao Cup. My point being, given what you saw last season, if Liverpool finished second, I don't think anybody in August picked Liverpool to pip City, or certainly not, well, maybe somebody did, but I certainly didn't, pip Liverpool to pip City in the league. So let's say they finished second by, what is the gap now, 2 points? Right. Let's say they finished second by right, 2 points. They probably exceed my August expectation of them. They got the Carabao Cup, great. Europa League, given Liverpool's history in the Champions League, I felt they would kind of, it wouldn't matter all that much to them. So it's about the FA Cup. As far as that failure goes.
Is Emi Martinez the epitome of a player you would love as a teammate and hate when he's on the other team? Mm-hmm. Who was the Emi Martinez when you played? Nadim.
Who would love to have on my team but hate on the opposition? I think the epitome of that would be someone like a Craig Bellamy. When, like, I played against him, he would talk a lot. Like a lot, let's just say that. But then when I played with him, I understood where he was trying to come from. But some of the stuff he'd be saying to some people during games, you could see he was reeling people in, trying to say, oh, what's your name? Oh, you know, you're playing really well. And the guy's like trying to explain who they are on the pitch, and Craig's just like laughing at them. I was like, all right, mate, you've been something there. So yeah, I'd say Craig Bellamy, because he was such a good player, but he had quite a mouth on him.
Shaka.
The name that first comes to mind is David Batty for some reason. I played with David Batty at Newcastle, incredible player, but kind of had an edge to him, you know, and so you could absolutely see how he'd rub people the wrong way. Not that he spoke to anybody, but he just had an edge on him. He could be a little bit naughty in midfield, but what a talent.
Stevie?
Can't think of anybody.
Maybe it was you then.
No. I was too busy concentrating on what I was doing.
Could notice
any goal.
Professional Stevie.
I was far too focused.
Doing stupid things. It didn't bother me.
I was far too focused at my job.
Would have never been me.
For Gab, what are the moves you think Milan need to make, either at manager or player-wise, to be serious title contenders again after two disappointing exits against Serie A rivals in back-to-back seasons?
Well, I think one obvious move that they need to make is to figure out a way to keep their players injury-free. That was obviously, especially early on in the season. People are turning the screws on Stefano Pioli. I think unless you get a serious upgrade, there's no point making a change. I think Milan have been, their success in recent years has been based around a certain kind of philosophy of pushing young players, and kind of unearthing talent, and playing attacking football. And that's what Pioli has tried to do. And it may not come natural to him, but he has embraced that. So I wouldn't tinker with that. Obviously, if Olivier Giroud leaves, you need to find another center forward, a real center forward. I think that's got to be priority number one. And I think also it could probably freshen up the right back position as well.
For Xhaka, how impressive was Lunin's performance yesterday, especially regarding the Bernardo Silva kick?
I've always found Lunin to be a really good goalkeeper, you know. I said at the start of the season I didn't understand Kepa as a preferred choice, but I've always found him talented, and he always what was that? I don't think he's ever put a he's hardly ever put a foot wrong for Real Madrid. No, you can't. He's no Thibaut Courtois, but as a number two, I've always found him really good.
What about the first game at in Madrid?
Well, exactly. I can't remember. We conceded three.
With a goal. It's Bernardo Silva.
I can't remember it.
First one, free kick.
I can't remember it.
He's got the amnesia.
My point being, but he's a number two. But he's a number two, and you get that. You don't.
Could have been a number three.
Well, you're not. I mean, he's not Thibaut Courtois. That's what I've said all along. Number two.
You're a van reverse.
As a number two, there are few better.
All right, I'll take
that. All right. Next question. For Gab, rank the owners from best to worst. Ooh. The Glazers, Todd Bowley, John Texter, Dai Young, Aurelio De Laurentiis.
Oh, God.
This is a Gab question.
Oh, my goodness. All right, so Dai Young obviously has to be in last place for obvious reasons, given what's happened with Reading. I would actually put, even though De Laurentiis destroyed Napoli, he would argue that he also built Napoli. So I might suggest he's possibly the best of that bunch. John Texter is kind of out of the race for me right now because I want to go and see what happens if he loses that lawsuit in Brazil where his team threw away a big lead. And then afterwards he's like, oh, look, the referees are all corrupt and I have proof. And then they sue him, like, all right, you better hand over the proof if you have this proof. But anyway, I don't want to go any further. We'll let the lawyers and the courts sort that one out. The Glazers would say that they're great owners if you're a Glazer because you enjoyed gigantic dividends from the perspective of the fans, not so much. So, yeah, I'd put the Glazers down there with Dai Young. So I'd probably go De Laurentiis. Oh, you've got Todd Bowley, too. Bowley's a tougher one because it's only been a couple of years. And again, if you're an investor with all the money they chucked around, it's not looking great. The results haven't been great. Bowley's better than Dai Young because Chelsea, for now, are still solvent. He hasn't been mean to the fans like the Glazers. So I'd put Bowley maybe above the Glazers.
Okay. Ooh. Stevie. How often have you accidentally come to the studio on your day off? And now that you're here, we can hear it from you yourself.
Well, I looked up the wrong schedule.
Which schedule you looked up?
I looked up, I think it was last week's.
2021.
So in my brain, I was in Wednesday and off Thursday, Friday. So that's why he ended up coming in. And I'm walking through the car park. And that's the biggest mistake wasn't turning up the wrong day. The biggest mistake was meeting Thomas in the car park.
And
he said, what are you doing here? And I went, what do you think I'm doing here? He went, you're not on. I went, yes, I am. And I actually, for about 2 seconds, convinced him that I was actually in. Because he went, oh, I thought you weren't in.
Did you?
And then he checked his schedule.
Did you just hang your tie and shirt up for today, Dave?
Did I? I absolutely did.
I had this shirt. I'm not going to let it waste.
Well, see, here's the thing. When I get home at night, what I've got to do is get out the car, open the front door and run up the stair before the dog gets me. Because then he'll slobber all over me. So I just get my gear off straight away anyway. But, so I thought, I'll just hang it up, put it on the wall.
You weren't away that long. He wouldn't miss you that much. You're like, oh, Steve's back already.
The best bit, Joyce, wrote, one of our makeup girls, wrote to Dan and said he actually came and sat down and got all his makeup done yesterday.
did you keep that on as well?
Well, I waited off, thank you.
All right, well, while we're here, did Eleanor pack Stevie a new lunch or did she make him bring in the one she made yesterday because he doesn't know his schedule?
I ate my lunch when I got home this morning. And watch the rest of the football.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow. I think we've got another tweet to come in. An unexpected one.
What? Who did what?
Yeah. Oh, it's Craig Burley. Oh. Craig Burley's tweets. Salah, there's no middle ground. Marvellous or mince? Craig Burley, anyone else not give up about who gets the fifth Champions League place? Must just be me. Okay. Craig Burley.
Was this him this afternoon?
Craig Burley. I've had it with the green now. These are all from the past couple of hours.
I'd love to know how he did it because he'll have his daughter's just had a baby, Oliver, right? And he says he's like, he's got them all the time. So he must have one arm like that with Oliver and the other one must be like doing me with a one finger pressing all his buttons to send out tweets.
Just explain he's angrier than usual because he's not getting any sleep. Yeah.
Hold on, it's not his win.
No,
why is he not sleeping?
But he's helping out, right?
Oh, God.
Honestly.
Craig needs to come in on his days off.
I recommend coming in on your day off, Craig, if you're listening.
Right. Well, we're all here for Craig Burley's tweets, the positivity corner, you name it, we're here for it. All right.
You're here for that.
Stevie will be here even if he's not on the schedule tomorrow.
Oh, God.